Collective is. That is our mission statement, and I'm just going to read it to you. So we're an all-volunteer organization that partners with artists, activists, individuals, and groups to lower the barriers to preserving at-risk audiovisual media, especially unseen, unheard, or marginalized works, by providing low-cost digitization services and fostering a community of support for archiving and access through education, research, and cultural engagement. So we generally take on partnerships and projects in, we try to define three areas. So digital preservation and transfer, actually digitizing small batches of tapes for community organizations or individuals. Two, education, such as providing workshops, consultancies, anything creative we can come up with. And then just cultural engagement, so presenting screenings, public talks to archival, creative, and or activist communities, all to encourage marginalized media preservation. So Transfer Collective strives to be a welcoming organization that actively works to contribute to a culture mindful of anti-oppressive, intersectionally feminist, community-based approaches to learning. So for the sake of time, if you would like to learn more about who we are and what we do, please visit our website and don't hesitate to contact us. Now I'm going to turn it over to Michael.
Hello. So I'm just going to tell you sort of briefly how we came to this project and what it is. Before we show, we're going to show about 19 minutes or so of video. So about a year ago, my wife, who's a composer, and I were looking on Airbnb for cheap places to go and take a brief vacation, writing retreat-y kind of thing. And we found this this wonderful cottage on coastal Maine, where, you know, for $75 a night, you can go and have your own cottage and play piano. And it seemed like a great deal, and it took us a while to for our schedules to book up with this amazing Airbnb, but we eventually scheduled ourselves a like 4 or 5 day little trip up there. And when we arrived, this is the place, this is the land that it's on. When we arrived, we met this man, Alan Wittenberg, who's the owner of this farm, and who's lived there. He's from Queens, but he's lived in Maine since the 1970s. And in the 1970s, he moved up to the farm, which was then owned by a man named Walter Nowick, who served in the military during, I think, World War II, but then after that was inspired by, you know, his time in Japan and moved back to Japan to study Zen Buddhism. Subsequently became the first Western-born Zen master, and moved to Maine, bought this farm, and founded a sort of Zen commune on this farm, which that's when Alan moved up to join the commune. In the 80s, sort of at the height of the Cold War, Walter Nowick decided he was a Juilliard trained pianist, and among many other things, and he decided that it would be great to form a local opera company out of all of these, you know, just all sorts of people. I mean, lots of, you know, like, you know, people who lived on his commune, and people who ran sawmills, and, you know, people who fish, all sorts of people. And so in 1984, he founded this opera company. And the first thing they did was they did a production of Aida. But within a year or so, Walter had decided that that what they really needed to do was learn Boris Godunov in Russian and go to the Soviet Union to sing Russian opera to the Russian people in Russian. Because as this is a quote from a profile on Walter in the New York Times, because people who sing, well, and ultimately to make friends with these Russians and sing alongside them. Because, quote, people who sing shoulder to shoulder with one breath can't fail to realize that they are members of one species. And then hopefully they wouldn't kill each other through nuclear war or other things. So in 1986, they got together their first international tour, and they went to the Soviet Union and they performed Boris Godunov in Russian. But they traveled several places. They went to I don't have the entire itinerary, but they went to Tbilisi, Georgia, and they hit, Walter had been encouraged by some people he knew who were familiar with the Soviet Union, that Georgia is a very different place than Russia, and it would be rude to just go to Georgia and sing Boris Godunov. So they learned a number of songs in Georgian, and in Tbilisi they put on a program of Russian, Georgian, and American songs. They performed, I think, a lot of Porgy and Bess on that trip. So over the next 2 years, they made two tours to the Soviet Union, and then in 1988, they had befriended the Leningrad Amateur Opera Company, and the Leningrad Amateur Opera then came to visit the Surrey Opera Company in Maine, and you'll see part of a documentary here today made by a Leningrad-based documentary production company. About that trip to Maine, and there's many tours, and the group operated throughout the 90s after the end of the Cold War. I think they kept up their relations with people in Russia, but they also started, you know, they sort of used some of Walter's connections in Japan to launched some initiatives there, and they went to Japan several times, and many people from Japan came here, and on and on and on. It's an incredible story. It's a remarkable thing, which is too long to tell, obviously, and also shows some video. But so while Kit and I were there, my wife and I were there. We were going. Alan took us on a tour of the entire farm, and he showed us all the buildings. He showed us the barn where they still do music, where the Surrey Opera Company used to perform. He's kind of a go-getter. So he takes people on tours of his property and tries to see if, you know, you can collaborate with him or whatever. But as we were walking through, there was, like, I spotted in one of the barns, there were these, like, two or three boxes of tapes, you know, just like moldy, you know, half of them, videotapes of documentation of the Surrey Opera Company. So when we came back to New York, I talked to my pals in Transfer Collective about this experience, and they were psyched to go to Maine and transfer a bunch of tapes. So we set it up with Alan and four of us, me, Marie, Brendan Allen and Carmel Curtis. Brendan can't be here today because he's playing drums in a concert to end mass incarceration, and Carmel can't be here because she lives in Indiana. But we went up to Maine for 3 days, and we hung out and we transferred a ton of tapes. And here's us hanging out, transferring the tapes. And and then I'm just gonna close. I'll briefly intro the videos. But I mean, I'm serious. This is a great guy who's trying to keep a wonderful thing alive. And if you want to go to this totally beautiful part of the world, which you do, I would recommend that you check out Alan's Airbnbs. You'll enjoy it a lot. You can email me if you need those links, or you can write them down now. So what we're gonna show though. Marie was just saying that the cow barn over here is the space where we digitize tapes, and that in that very kitchen, that's where the Leningrad Amateur Opera made big pots of food, and they slept right upstairs from there. So history. So what we're going to show, and I'll go through this really quickly. We're going to show. It's about 19 minutes, and there's a news piece, an ABC news piece, which will give you some more context for the Surrey Opera Company, followed by They had this amazing tape of all of the footage that ABC shot for this piece, which you don't usually get that when you're on the news, but they had it. And it's really interesting, like 40 minutes of singing in the barn with some like really strange shots, because they're like, you know, close-ups of, you know, they're close-ups of something waiting for something to happen. Anyway, it's very interesting. We show a little bit of that. We show we're showing a documentary, part of a documentary called 30 Days in One Storied America, which will tie in with Maria's presentation, which is coming up in a few minutes. And we are showing some clips from the Tbilisi production of Abbasalam and Eteri, which is one of the only operas written in Georgian. And it was the Surrey Opera Company's only fully staged, fully costumed productions, because as you can imagine, to rehearse in Maine and then go abroad and perform a thing, you know, it's hard to build a set, and, you know, but they did this one time in Georgia. So you'll see bits of all those things, and you'll be moved. I think you'll enjoy it. And this is us again. So you may show the clips. Thank you so much.
Think of opera. What places and people come to mind? The Metropolitan Opera in New York, maybe Milan in Italy, Placido Domingo or Luciano Pavarotti. There's opera in a lot of unusual places as well, sung by ordinary folk. ABC's John McKenzie has discovered one of them.
The folks around Surrey, Maine, as you'd expect, are a rugged, independent sort. You can find them cutting up pine wood by a forest, or serving up meals at a local diner.
There you go.
Some are busy nursing animals back to health, or farming mussels from the sea. This is what people around here do for a living. Now wait till you hear what they do for fun. Meet the Surrey Opera Company. 3 years ago, some of these people could barely carry a tune in the shower. Now they're singing Mozart on the stage.
Sliding up to it.
The person responsible for all this is 61-year-old Walter Nowick, a classical pianist. Nowick convinced his neighbors that singing opera could teach them something about each other and about the world around them.
You learn that you have to be in unity and you have to be in harmony. When you sing together, there is no competition. You're singing together to create something.
Anyone is welcome to join this company, and more than 80 people have, practicing twice a week in Nowick's barn. Here he teaches young and old alike not only to sing, but to sing in German and Russian and Italian.
I was probably the world's shyest person, and the singing has been wonderful. It just goes away. You just get up and you sing, and it just goes.
Paul Brayton is now a proud bass in Surrey's Opera Company.
I really didn't like opera at all before I started singing. I never even wanted to go to one.
And what happened?
Well, all of a sudden I found it's kind of interesting.
It has changed my life in the sense that I have the outlet. Here I have the opportunity to sing. I am singing roles like the greatest tenor in the world is singing.
These singers are now so accomplished and so proud of their music that they've given more than 30 performances, paying their own way from Surrey to the Soviet Union. They have come a long way. Just as Nowick had promised, music has opened up a whole new horizon for folks here. The Surrey Opera Company might never make it to Broadway or to La Scala, but as the song says, John McKenzie. ABC News, Surrey, Maine. The Surrey Opera Company is going to the Soviet Union for 15 days to sing with and enjoy the company of Soviet singers in Leningrad and Tbilisi, Georgia, USSR. They are departing direct from Bangor International Airport November 14th, and non-singers and singers alike are invited to join them on this exciting goodwill mission. For more information, please call 667-2629.
Вместе со своими коллегами и друзьями американской любительской оперой Sari Opera Company. По приглашению ее художественного руководителя, пианиста и дирижера Уолтера Нойка. Так реально осуществлялась программа People of the Earth Together. Люди Земли вместе. Америка представлялась нам страной, набитой автомобилями и уставленной небоскребами. Машин действительно хватало. А вот небоскребов было гораздо меньше ожидаемого. Америка оказалась, как писали когда-то Ильф и Петров, одноэтажной. Вернее, двухэтажной. Давно знали друг друга. Сари Опера уже трижды побывала в СССР. Правда, ленинградцы прилетели в Америку впервые. И осуществить это было не очень просто. Но при поддержке Ленинградского музыкального общества и при помощи меценатов, или, как теперь модно говорить, спонсоров, Ленинградского центра научно-технического творчества молодежи «Антарес», и новосибирского кооператива «Протон», мы в Америке. И вот нас встречает сам Уолтер Нойк. Очень похожим на нашу Карелию, только роль озер здесь выполнял Атлантический океан. А городок Сари оказался обыкновенной американской деревней. Знаменитый концертный зал Сари Опера представлял собой большой деревянный сарай, но со сценой и вместительным зрительным залом, где и начались репетиции и представления. Американцы шутливо называют это строение «Barn of Culture», что в переводе звучит еще забавнее – «Сарай культуры».
Играть не слушать, как это музыка. Меня, совместное представление оперы Мусоргского «Борис Годунов» в концертном исполнении. Пели на языке оригинала. Причем, если ленинградцам петь на родном языке было привычно, то американцы решали нелегкую для себя задачу. Больше полугода репетировали они «Бориса», и теперь все хоровые и сольные партии поют по-русски.
Thank you. Next up, we have Maria Vinogradova presenting the Leningrad Amateur Accordion Ensemble. Maria recently defended her doctoral dissertation for the Department of Cinema Studies at NYU and is currently a writer in residence at NYU's Jordan Center for the Advanced Study of Russia. Maria.
Thank you for this introduction, Ethan. And I'm really excited to be in the same panel with the Transfer Collection. What they do is really incredible. And knowing the idea for this presentation here at Orphans inspired me to propose for screening a film I have long wanted to show. I think the Orphans people who helped to put the screening together. And this film is not about love. It's a film about seeing and being seen, looking and being looked at, and it's an amateur film about amateurs. And going back to the question of love, though, one quote from Plato's Symposium provides food for thought here. So the definition of love in this quote is love is a mean between ignorance and knowledge. And the quote, we often speak of the origins of the concept of amateur in love. And for me, this is the most powerful metaphor for amateurs in the whole book. The quote belongs to dear Tima de Mantinea, who was not present at the symposium, but she was quoted by Socrates, who called her, I quote, my instructress in the art of love. And according to dear Tima of Mantinea, love was born on Aphrodite's birthday to plenty and poverty. So plenty was her father, poverty was her mother. And I will leave it at this. Although if anyone feels like engaging in philosophical discussions, I will be happy to do so in the break, for this is a symposium after all. Back to the film. It was made in 1973 in Leningrad, the Soviet name for St. Petersburg, by an amateur film studio housed in the Palace of Culture, palace not barn, of labor reserves that served students of vocational schools in the city. And the Palace of Culture had several strong amateur collectives in it. One of them was the Pavel Smirnov Accordion Orchestra, the subject of this film. The orchestra was composed of teenage students learning working class occupations in those vocational schools. And it is still going strong today, led by Smirnov's son and grandson. And the film was made from footage shot while the ensemble was on a tour of Scandinavian countries in 1972. And what I find particularly interesting about this film is that it combines two of the most common genres in amateur filmmaking, that is travel and portrait film. And what to do with footage shot on trips has always been a question for amateurs, and we can find advice and how-to manuals dating back to the 1930s in various publications. In particular, I found them in British and American magazines that instruct amateurs not to bore their friends and family with all that footage they shot during their trips. So present them in an engaging way that tell a story. That was the common advice. And what the film collective here, or the film studio here did, they narrated the trip as seen through the eyes of the accordion ensemble's director, Pavel Smirnov. And having him casually comment on what he saw during the trip, the film simultaneously creates a portrait of him as a creative personality. And this is a very clever way to frame it, since instead of making him a subject of a more regular interview, the film emphasizes this power as a creator, as an author, through giving him the power of the gaze. And for the most part, we are not looking at him, but at what he is looking at and telling us to look at. So in the Soviet Union, traveling abroad was a privilege accessible to a handful of people. And in addition to artists and celebrities, one category that could travel abroad were prominent amateur collectives, such as this one. They were presented abroad as evidence of achievements of socialism that enables everyone to develop into a well-rounded personality. And the slide here, you will see it in the film. It is studio's emblem. So we see a hammer and a lyre here. And obviously this is a reference to the famous hammer and sickle emblem that symbolizes the solidarity of workers and peasants in building socialism. In this instance, peasants are left out, but the hammer and lyre symbolize that very well-rounded personality, worker artist. And a few words on the instrument played in this film. Although it is referred to as accordion in the program notes, it is actually called bayan. And I'm not a big specialist on the subject, but I conducted some research. Maybe if there are musicians here in the audience, they will be able to tell me more. But it's a type of button accordion constructed in Russia in the late 19th century. So it uses buttons instead of keys, but also its internal construction is different. And from what I read, it has a deeper bass, and also supposedly it's better for classical music. So bayan, when you see this word in the subtitles, that's what we are looking at. Although we will see accordions in the film as well. Now a few words about the person who saved the film, enabling us to see it today. And I'm staying with my familiar slide pattern, slide template. So most of the Soviet amateur films surviving today are not in any formal archives. One of the prominent collections, probably the largest collection of Soviet amateur films I know, is housed in the basement of the former Moscow Amateur Film Club. So Moscow Amateur Film Club was an organization, a center in Moscow that coordinated smaller amateur film studios, but also it housed the national amateur film competitions. And upon completion of these competitions, it printed copies of award-winning films and left them in the library. So it used to be a very extensive film library by the early 80s, but then after the end of the Soviet Union, as it happens, it was badly mismanaged, and most of it was lost. But in 2005, this person here on the left, his name is Daniil Zhezhirun, who used to go to the club when he was a teenager, found out about the unfortunate state of the collection. And he brought the remaining films into the best possible condition. So the film we are going to watch right now is a new digital transfer that comes from Daniil's collection. And it is made from a 16 millimeter print of this film, although I believe it was made on 35. And I am introducing him to you because he deserves applause for his selfless efforts in saving these films. Thank you, but it's not, please don't screen the film yet, because this is not it. So spending much of his free time in the basement of the former Moscow Amateur Film Club, Daniel watches a lot of films, and therefore we can say that he also has the power of the gaze. And occasionally he looks at Pavel Smirnov himself, and we will look at Pavel Smirnov now as he watches his orchestra on the tour of Scandinavia. So we are ready to screen.
Сейчас покажут нашу скандинавскую пленку. Ведь как в жизни складывается? Мы считали фантазером каким-то. Зачем создаешь ансамбль? Ансамбль балениста. Никто же не верил в это. Теперь другое дело. Теперь наоборот, кругом ансамбль. Я получаю сотни писем. Все началось в войну в 43-м году, в 12-м ремесленном училище. Блокада. Поглядел на лица ребят, меня уже больше уговаривать не пришлось. Если вы спросите, сколько у меня с той поры было ансамблей, у меня их было много. Не подумал бы, что наши волжские припевки способны так озвучить Скандинавию. Поездки чем интересны? Не только новые места, но и какой-то новый взгляд на себя, как бы со стороны, на все, что ты делаешь. Знаете, привыкаешь, перестаешь замечать, а для искусства это гибель. О чем я думаю здесь? Вот аккорд. Почему-то никогда не замечал я этого. Вот в волжских припевках. Па-па-па-па-па-па-па-па. Почему этот аккорд получился форте? Не знаю. Вот я вижу сейчас, что я не то делаю. Это не то. Это надо исправить. А я услышал тогда, когда мы уже 15 лет играли. За границей я даже не знаю, хорошо мы играли или плохо. Может, я и недоволен. Но успех всюду был колоссальный. Помните, что говорили студенты консерватории? Как они подходили, что они говорили? Значит, это было хорошо. Только представьте, в Королевской консерватории выступает баян. Я думал, что мы будем выступать номером, но у нас почти все концерты были самостоятельными. И все концерты шли с таким подъемом. Видишь не просто лицо, видишь все лицо. Чувствуешь, что ему это нравится, что он это делает от всей души. Мы же не просто показывали оркестр профтехобразования. Мы представляли и Советский Союз. Сейчас лебедя. Не то. Это не то. Почему? Почему я сказал, что Барфа так громко играл? Это слишком громко. Это слишком броско. А тут не надо так. Тут надо задумчиво. Тут надо так, чтобы ласкало ухо. Не мешало. Вы знаете, я даже когда смотрю хоккей или футбол, обязательно вижу свой оркестр. Думаю, боже, как он подал мне так. И все у меня связывается. Вот смотрю на поле, а у меня перед глазами оркестр. Те, которые стоят у станка, они 80% те, которые учатся. Вот правильно, что здесь показано. Очень хорошо, кстати. Как они шьют. И обтачивают детали. И послушайте, как они умеют играть. Я уверен, будь жив Глинка или Чайковский, послушали бы, они бы сейчас расцеловали ребят. Не то. Что делать? Творчество есть творчество. Нет конца.
Thank you. inspired and humbled again. Let's take a break. The Stephen Parr tribute will start promptly at 5 o'clock. Thank you. Great panel.